Hello, my friend. Welcome to the Business Leadership Today podcast. I'm your host, Matt Tenney. As an active CEO, my goal is to build and sustain world-class organizations that make a positive impact on the lives of employees and on the global community. Through this podcast, I get the opportunity to speak with top thought leaders and business leaders to help me learn proven approaches and strategies for the many aspects of running a successful organization. This episode is the first test of a new format we're experimenting with for this podcast, where we interview a successful leader and ask them about the most important problem they've solved as a leader. I am so excited that the first guest we have for this new format is Gary Ridge, who recently retired as the CEO of the WD-40 company, one of the most recognizable brands in the world. Gary is considered by many experts and by me to be one of the most successful business leaders in the world by any measure you use for leadership effectiveness. Gary became CEO of the WD-40 company in 1997, and during his time as the CEO of that company, its sales quadrupled, its international sales skyrocketed, and its market capitalization increased from $250 million to $2.5 billion. While achieving those incredible financial results, Gary also made a tremendous positive impact on the lives of the employees at the WD-40 company. Employees at the WD-40 company are highly engaged and very happy. Surveys routinely suggest that over 90% of the employees are engaged at work, and nearly 99% of employees routinely state, "I love to tell people that I work for the WD-40 company." I hope you are as excited as I am about learning from Gary Ridge. In the next few minutes, Gary, thanks so much for taking the time to be here today on the Business Leadership Today podcast.
Well, g'day, Matt. It's great to be here. That was quite an undeserving rap of me, but a very deserving rap of the company. So, and I just love being a test pilot. Thank you for letting me be a test pilot today.
My pleasure. Thanks for being willing. So, Gary, can you kick us off here by talking a little bit about how is it you came to be CEO of one of the most recognizable brands in the world, the WD-40 company?
Well, I joined WD-40 in 1987 in Australia, and I opened the Australian subsidiary, and I was working in the Asia Pacific market. And in 1994, the CEO then asked me, would I like to move to the US? And I said, to do what? He said, to help take the blue and yellow can with a little red top to the world. And I said, that sounds pretty exciting. Yeah, okay, I'll do that. So yeah. that sounded like it was pretty easy, doesn't it? So we packed up our toys and we moved to San Diego. And 3 years later, he retired. And how I became CEO is, I think it was because I had this dream of taking the can to the world. And I was very passionate about our opportunities around our global business. So I don't know why a board of directors of a public company would ever pick a guy from Australia who'd never been to Wall Street to be CEO, but I think it was because we had a dream.
So they bought into the vision.
Yes, they absolutely did.
Great. So you were CEO from 1997. You recently retired. I think it was the fall of last year, right? 2022?
Yes. And I refired. I didn't retire. Only old people with nothing. Well, I shouldn't say that, but I refired. I just completed my 25-year apprenticeship in leadership, and now it's time for me to put it to work.
Oh, nice. So you view your stint as the CEO of one of the most recognizable brands in the world as a nice paid internship, apprenticeship for leadership development, right?
25 years of learning every day.
Awesome. So speaking of learning, I would imagine that you encountered a number of very challenging problems as the CEO of a company and trying to grow it to the extent that you grew it. During your career as the CEO of the WD-40 company, what would you say is the biggest problem that you faced?
Well, I'm going to switch that around, Matt. I'm not going to call it a problem. I'm going to call it an opportunity. And the opportunity was very, very clear back in 1997. The strategy of the company was solid, you know, make the end user aware, make it easy to buy. And there were plenty of end users around the world. The challenge we had was we didn't have a culture that was one that would allow us to expand globally. The culture was very strong, but it was a very inward domestic culture. So the biggest opportunity I had was, how do you take a company and build a culture globally? And there's a story behind that because I didn't know how to do it. And I was on an aeroplane about a year into my role as CEO. I was on a Qantas 747 in the upper deck. I was flying from Los Angeles to Sydney. And it was about 38,000 feet above the sea across the Pacific Ocean. And maybe 2 a.m. in the morning. I don't know what time it was, but I had my little reading lamp on. I think it was the only light that was shining down in the cabin. And as you do when you travel a lot, you know, you always have that folder with a lot of stuff in it that you've never read that you want to read. And I was kind of reading through things. And I read an article and it had this statement in it. Our purpose in life is to make people happy. If we can't make them happy, at least don't hurt them. And it was attributed to the Dalai Lama. I thought, wow, that's a really interesting concept. I like that. And interestingly enough, I was reading another article and it quoted Aristotle, pleasure in the job puts perfection in the work. And I thought, wow, how could you create a culture where people really, really enjoyed what they were doing? Hopefully you could send them home happy, which I thought was a great thing because happy people build happy families build happy communities build a happy world. And if Aristotle was right, and I guess I got to think he might be, he was born in 384 BC and he's accredited with being a philosopher, then they would do great work. And that kind of stuck in my head. And I kept thinking, how do I do this? And then the third influencer in all of this was Dr. Ken Blanchard. I saw a program at the University of San Diego, and it was a master's degree in leadership. And I went to a information session on it, and Ken was speaking there, and he said, most MBAs get people in the head. We've got to start getting them in the heart, because it's the heart and soul of people that create a passion, which creates a high will of the people. And I thought, wow, that's interesting. So I went and I applied. And as a CEO of a public company in the year 2000, I went back to school and I got a master's degree in leadership. Mm. And in that 2 year period, I learned all of the aspects that were important to build a great culture. You know, the first one is, you know, do you have a totally dedicated people mindset? You know, it's all about the people. It's not about you. You know, I'm the dumbest person in the room, thank goodness, so I can surround myself with great people. Do you have a clearly identifiable purpose? So why do we all get up every day? And we created a new purpose at the company, and we existed to create positive, lasting memories, solving problems in factories, homes, and workshops around the world. So now as we went out to create that culture globally, when I was talking to new people that would come on board, I'd say, hey, we're going to create memories in 176 countries around the world. Don't you think that's fun? Gives you little goosebumps, right?
Yeah.
And then you've got to have a clearly defined hierarchical set of values. Very important. The values were the foundation. So the values were going to be the same across the world. And that not only protected our people, but set them free. And then, of course, you have to have a great strategy. You have to be bold at your execution. And then finally, we had to take fear out of the learning. So we said, we're not going to make mistakes. We're going to take the word failure out. We're going to have learning moments. And the definition of a learning moment was the positive or negative outcome of any situation that needs to be openly and freely shared with all people. So that was kind of the journey from, you know, getting the opportunity, being scared, but not afraid, identifying what I thought was the way we could go, going and learning how to do it, and then executing it, and the rest is history.
So what made you think, you know, when you realized, okay, the company's got a great strategy for growth, and how did you connect the dots between realizing that although there's an effective strategy, the culture isn't ready to take WD-40 to the world? And how did you connect that with, okay, but if I create a culture where people are thriving, where we're helping people to be happy, they're doing great work because they're enjoying what they're doing. How did you connect that with that's going to allow us to expand the WD-40 company and its brand globally?
Well, firstly, I was very clear in my mind that the sun never sets on WD-40. So what I mean by that is, we are every minute of the day somewhere around the world making someone aware and trying to help them buy it. Now, you can't micromanage that. So how do we set a framework where whatever time of day it was, anywhere around the world, we knew that our people were passionately executing against what we saw as being the opportunity. And it wasn't going to be because we had people micromanaging them. We had to give them freedom. And the freedom, and to be free, you have to have protection. Because if you're free without protection, then you can run anywhere and be injured. You know, and that's why the values are so important. If you think about values in an organization, like the banks of a river, you know, the river starts in the mountains and goes to the sea, and the banks guide the water down the mountain to the sea. Now, if there were no banks, it would be a big cesspool of stinky water. So that's how we saw that, you know, people could travel down this river and be, you know, there's going to be rapids and there's going to be places where you would have fun and there's going to be opportunities and there's going to be fear and danger and enjoyment, but staying within those values. So having the opportunity to not only create those values, but then embed them in the behavior of the tribe globally, allowed them to execute on our dream, but keep them safe and protect the company at the same time.
I see. So one of the components of the opportunity that you're, as you're calling it, is that although there's an effective strategy, obviously you have to have people who can execute on that strategy, and the details of the execution are going to be very different in Johannesburg, South Africa, than they are going to be in Chicago, Illinois. And if you have people who are empowered to come up with the details for how they're going to execute the strategy, given where they're at in the world, what the culture is like there, what the employees that they're working with are like there, then you're a much more agile organization that can actually adapt to the different cultures that you're in. Is that kind of the idea?
Yeah. And two things that motivate people are choice and connection. You know, you can't motivate people. You have to let people be motivated. And to do that, people want to have freedom and choice. So give them the opportunity to make their own choices within a platform where they're safe. So, you know, it's here's where you can play. So make your choices. So, you know, people want to make their own choices. That gives them freedom. They want to be connected. They want to know they belong and they want to know they matter. And culture is what delivers that. That's not, you know, hierarchical, you know, top-down management that does that.
Right. So it's what you're saying is that, you know, when you've got a really strong culture where people feel safe, they feel connected, and they've got these guiding principles, they've got a vision that everyone's bought into, a purpose, right? And they've got guiding values, then you and the other senior leaders feel a lot more comfortable to give people free rein to say, hey, within these parameters, as long as it's in furtherance of this purpose, with these shared values, and you're taking care of each other along the way, no one's getting, you're not getting, being successful at the expense of your peers. You could basically do what you need to accomplish the mission, as long as it's ethical as well and legal, right?
Well, the values help them keep it ethical and legal. But, you know, again, words matter. So, you know, we don't want this hierarchical quack down. Every time I make a decision, I better call the big boss and find out what to do. Here's our plan. Here's our strategy. Here's our goal. Here's our vision. Now go out and play like hell. And, you know, and words matter. We don't want managers. We want coaches and mentors. We don't want rules. We want guidelines and values that allow people to do what they need to do.
I love it. So you had mentioned that two of the really important components of culture are this shared sense of purpose and values, and then connection, right? So feeling connected to each other. And I know this is something that you dealt with as CEO, is going through the COVID pandemic where everyone's sent home to work virtually. And then you dealt with the question of what do we do as people are coming back to the office and how do we handle that? That's a huge part of culture, right? And it's a huge part of how do we create this culture that's going to create the foundation for for consistent, effective execution of the strategy that the organization has agreed to utilize to achieve its mission. So what are your thoughts here on, you know, how should leaders be handling this issue of, do people come back to work? Should they stay virtual? I mean, what are your thoughts on this as it relates to having a really high performance culture?
Thank you, because it's something that's really on my mind right now, because I think we're on the verge of allowing something to dilute culture in organizations. So firstly, this virtual versus in-presence working environment is quite kind of selective. Not only am I, involved with WD-40, I'm on the board of Gorilla Glue. And, you know, they have a huge factory out in Cincinnati, right? Now, the people had to go to work there every day because you can't make glue in your lounge room. So it's not about everybody. But secondly, this thing about connectedness, one of the biggest desires we have as human beings is to be connected. If you think of Maslow's hierarchy to self-actualization, you know, the third rung of that is about connection, intimacy, if you will, being together. And when COVID hit, we had to act as being safe. So we said to people, where you can, don't be together. And people did that. And we've learned through that there are some things people can do that used to be in an office, they can do somewhere else. That's okay. And people did that. But as they did that, they started losing personal connection. And if you think about, why do people get put in solitary confinement in jail? And how do they feel after that? You know, it's absolutely punishment. So my challenge to leaders now is, you have to be brave enough now to ensure that you continue to build your culture by finding a way to bring people together on a regular basis. And it doesn't have to be 5 days a week. It could be a couple of days a week. And here's the answer that they've got to come up with. As Matt runs out the door this morning and gives his husband, wife, significant other, kids, whatever, a high five and says, I'm on my way to fill in the blank office today. And I'm so excited because I'm going to fill in the blank today. Now, that fill in the blank may be, I'm going to see my best friend at work. I'm going to be involved in something. But if we don't let people get back together or bring them back together and be brave enough to do that, we're going to dilute culture within an organization. Now, there was a lot of talk about the great resignation. I wrote an article about that on LinkedIn. I called it the great escape. People were escaping toxic cultures. Right. And right now, people who are resisting going back might have this thought in their mind. You want me to go back to that stinking culture and get, you know, a fatal beating over there mentally again? Right. So, but I know organizations that have strong cultures where people are saying, I'm excited to go back because I want to see Matt and I want to see Joe and I want to be involved in that strategic discussion and I want to have those conversations over the coffee machine where I learned so much and I want to go back because I'm going to learn to be better as a person. So leaders out there, you have to be brave enough, but don't talk about coming back to the office because we don't trust you. We've got to start talking about coming back to the office because connection is absolutely vital to us as a human being. We're social animals. And if we don't get connected and we don't continue to connect, we're going to drain corporate culture. We're going to drain the opportunity to be entrepreneurial and have a lot of fun.
Mm. So it sounds like to me, you know, you had mentioned earlier how important the words that we use are, right? We don't want a manager or a boss. We want a coach and a mentor, right? We don't want rules. We want guidelines and values. And here I'm hearing you saying, I don't want to be told I need to come back to the office so that we're more productive. What leaders could be doing is having this pull framework, using a more inspirational approach, saying, look, you know, what really makes our culture strong and what makes work meaningful is the opportunity to add value in the lives of your peers in the workplace. And that's much easier done in person. So we want to explore ways to get you to collaborate in person. You were fine productivity wise, you know, virtual, but we're more concerned about you finding meaning in your work and enjoying your work. And so let's explore that. Is that kind of what you're saying?
1,000%. 1,000%. Because that is the glue that keeps us together. And remember, people want to know they belong. They want to know they matter. They want to be connected. And don't take the connection away. So be brave.
Well, Gary, thank you again so much for taking the time to chat with me. This has been fantastic. I really appreciate your time.
Always great to be with you, Matt. And remember, life's a gift. Don't send it back unwrapped.
Roger. So for those of you who are really enjoyed this conversation as much as I did, and you want to learn more about Gary and his current work, he's actually doing quite a bit of consulting now. He's working on a new book. I don't know if the title is finalized yet, but I know the working title. I love it. It's something along the lines of "Any Dumbass Can Do It."
Perfect.
Right. So, you know, if you want to keep in touch with Gary, he's easy to find on LinkedIn. His website is thelearningmoment.net. So there you can learn more about his work, learn more about what he has to offer to help you if you want to learn from him beyond what you could learn from him here in the brief 25-minute conversation we just had. And until the next time I have an opportunity to hopefully offer something of value to you or be helpful to you, I wish you great success in building a world-class organization that's having a positive impact on employees and on the global community. Bye for now.